Hello and welcome to another episode of Rhythm and Brews. I'm joined today by returning guest Pete Landry. Hey, Pete.
Hello.
Welcome back. And you're here today to talk to us about John Frusciante.
Yeah, that's right.
And for people who may not be familiar with him, who is he and why are we talking about him today?
Sure. John Frusciante is a guitarist. He happens to be the guitarist for the Red Hot Chili Peppers right now, and he was at different points in their career or their lifetime as well, you know. But he has like a very extensive solo career as well.
And I think when you kind of pitched the idea for this episode to me, a lot of it was the focus was on some of the solo stuff. That because I frankly wasn't even aware that he had much of a solo catalog. I was just doing a little bit of research, and I think in 1 year he put out like 6 albums and has like 18 total solo albums or something like that.
Right, exactly.
Which is wild.
And I'm not overly a huge Red Hot Chili Peppers fan. I think the Red Hot Chili Peppers get a bad rap, and for good reason. For a lot of it, they're kind of silly and cheesy, and Anthony Kiedis tends to ruin a lot of music. So I'm not like overly a big fan of them, but getting into John Frusciante's solo career was kind of like eye-opening at like what else he was capable of outside of the funk stuff. So it's worth highlighting the stuff that he did on his own,
which is interesting. When I heard John Frusciante solo stuff, like as a concept, I was like, oh, I bet this is like the best parts of Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Sure.
And it kind of doesn't seem that way. It seems like a little bit more of a, well, it seems kind of all over the place.
Agreed. It's one of those things where it feels like when he was in the Peppers, he would have preferred to have them sound more like the stuff that he's into, his solo stuff. And we'll get into it later at different, you know, points in the playlist.
Sure.
But they always are trying to get back to like the more funk aspects of the Chili Peppers, and he's trying to always kind of get away from that because he felt like they already did all of that.
Sure.
So he tends to take that out in his solo career more.
Got it. Well, we'll get into your playlist in a second, but we always start with a segment called BYOB. And for this, my really only access point for John Frusciante until today has been Red Hot Chili Peppers. So I tried to do a Blood Sugar Sex Magic
nice
4-pack here. So I've got, representing Blood, I've got a Blood Orange Goza by Anderson Valley. For sugar, I have a Rainbow Sherbet sour ale.
Cool.
For sex, I've got Oil of Aphrodite, which is a stout brewed with walnuts.
That sounds awesome.
And then for magic, this one's a little bit of a stretch.
Sure.
It just has like a picture of a donkey on it casting magic spells, it looks like. But it's the beer is called Imperial Donkey.
The color scheme fits with the cover of Blood Sugar Sex Magic, the red, the black, and the white and everything. So that works too.
So anyway, I don't know. I'll start with one of these and you can have whatever sounded.
Yeah, I'll start with the walnut one.
Oh, sounds good.
Thank you very much. And while you're doing that,
I'll start with the sherbet one. I'm just a little bit curious about that.
Sure. I love the label on that one too. While you're getting that ready, one thing I kind of want to establish up front is kind of the history behind John Frusciante. He joined the Red Hot Chili Peppers before they made Mother's Milk when he was 18 years old. So he was a huge fan of the Chili Peppers and kind of got into them when they were into like the more punk and funk club scene, smaller local California band. And the first album he did with them, Mother's Milk, was kind of a hit, but not like a huge hit. And then Blood Sugar Sex Magic went on to become like this crazy hit, which is kind of worth establishing up front, just that like he got into the band thinking they were going to be this local like punk band, and then instantly they kind of became this huge successful band, and that kind of sets the tone for like his kind of emotional state and reaction to fame and all this kind of stuff. We'll get into it more when we get going.
Should we dive into your playlist?
Sure.
What's the first song we're...
The first song we're going to go over is called Mascara. It's on the album Nandrolades and Usually Just a T-Shirt, which is two different albums put together that he put out at the same time.
Okay.
He released it in 1994, right after he finished with Blood Sugar Sex Magik. He recorded this half of the album during Blood Sugar Sex Magik, and then Usually Just a T-Shirt he did while they were on tour for it, getting way too big. At this point, the success and fame was kind of getting to him, and he was doing heroin and cocaine every single day, and kind of losing his mind hearing voices and things like that.
Had he left the band yet or no?
No, he didn't. He hadn't left the band. He put the album out as he was kind of leaving the band, but when he was recording it, it was kind of like he's fighting with the band every day. He's dealing with interviews that are going terrible. He's constantly on tour.
My kind of impression of them in those early days is that they were all pretty fucked up on drugs.
And this is after he joined the band replacing the original guitarist, who was best friends in high school with all of the original members, and had died of heroin overdose.
Oh, jeez.
Cool part of the album here is that he just keeps looping different vocals on top of itself. Like, they're all different lyrics from different other songs on the album. He did the whole thing on a 4-track player, which is crazy that he got this much kind of, you know, texture to it. It's kind of also showing his, like, binge of creativity that he's going to show up multiple times on the playlist, but he's got too many different melodies for one song that he can't just pick one, you know?
Yeah. It's kind of a maximalist tendency.
Agreed. It's also, this is one of the more listenable songs on the album. The song is almost impossible to listen to, especially the second half where it didn't even like label the song names or anything like that. It's all untitled on the second half. And most of it's either just beautiful guitar picking or just screaming. Just you, one or the other. No kind of middle ground.
Is that him on vocals?
Mm-hmm. One thing also, like, a lot of John Frusciante fans get annoyed with it because they bring it up all the time. After these albums came out, he kind of went into like a heroin dark period for about 10 years and all his teeth fell out and he lost the ability to like really talk or sing. He stopped playing guitar altogether and started only painting.
That's wild.
Yeah, he goes crazy at this point. And then,
I can't believe you can even do that and not die.
Right. Oh, there were points where people described him as just skin over a skeleton, just barely a person. He had no consideration for his health. One of the songs that he's singing right here is called Been Insane, which appears as like its own song later on the album, and it's really awesome.
I'm sure we'll get to it, but I can't imagine going that you could go through a phase of just dark ages of drugs and come out of it not being completely weird and fucked up,
because he stops thinking of himself as John Frusciante during this period and like refers to him as something else. It, like, he's constantly hearing voices without you. This is really cool. And then it just cuts into this beautiful guitar melody that he just has nothing to do with, you know. Tons of really cool things where, like, you'll listen to this album and it'll be maybe 10 minutes of unlistenable garbage and then 45 seconds of like the best guitar playing you've ever heard. And then like another 10 minutes that you can barely stand. But it's really good. It's worth checking out, but only as someone who kind of, if you enjoy the next 4 or 5 songs, I would say go back and check it out. But like, it's worth just pointing out his starting point. For as much as he's considered one of the best guitar players of all time, for the longest time, he didn't take any consideration into his recording texture or quality. And like doing these 4 tracks, these 8 tracks, the next song is entirely done on 8-track plugged in using digital. And for as great as the songs are, he thinks that he doesn't get recognized because he didn't put enough quality into the recording style, whatever.
Is that maybe a good transition point into the next song here?
I would say so.
Going Inside, is it?
Yep. He recorded this using an 8-track digital player. It's the only time he says that he's going to use digital in his life because he was so disappointed with how it sounded.
Really?
This is his actual voice. It's not the guitar at all. He wanted to do like a solo kind of lead-in with his voice. But you can totally confuse it for a guitar.
Yeah.
This album is after he had done the Heroinies Clean at this point. He already had recorded Californication and just jumped right into this. One of the things I'll point out multiple times over the next couple albums and songs is his ego was kind of destroyed after the success of Blood Sugar Sex Magik and then the heroin cocaine years. A lot of the lyrics that he does at this point are self-coaching, kind of like telling himself zen thoughts and things to kind of keep himself from getting too into his own head.
And you can even hear the difference in the voice.
Mm-hmm. His voice is kind of more rich and full at this point. And you'll notice at different points he has a lisp, and it's because of his teeth being not real and he's trying to get used to them.
I wonder how that would have happened for him to get reintegrated into the band.
I know.
After that.
They had Dave Navarro from Jane's Addiction as like a temporary guitar player, and right after he quit, lined up with... after like a month of John Frusciante being clean and going through rehab and things like that, and Flea kind of invited him back, and I don't know.
And it worked?
Yeah, it worked for a very long time.
Kind of crazy, yeah.
Yeah.
And then to do maybe their second most successful album.
Oh, for sure. Californication was huge. This album also, and at this time, when Californication came out, I had no idea about his solo career, that he was doing this kind of stuff. I was just I think I was a sophomore. I was on here for like the Gift episode and talking about getting Californication in high school and just being like, oh, and being so into it just because it was mainstream rock and not really knowing who John Frusciante was or like what the history involved with his story at that point. At that point, probably maybe the year after, I took a trip with my high school music class to New York City, and one of the things we could do on the day off was go anywhere we wanted, and me and my friend Adam Jordan, who went on to become the guitar player in one of my bands and the drummer in another one of my bands, and we went to Tower Records, like the big Tower Records in New York City, and we were like trying to find records that were imports from other countries that we couldn't get in like Boston, and I picked up the Gorillaz album, British versions, the first Gorillaz album at that time, just because I had seen Clint Eastwood on like MTV2, and I was like, I don't know what this is, but I want to get it. And then he picked up this album, and I had no idea who it was, and we kind of just were swapping headphones on the way back, and it was just blowing my mind that this was the same guy from the Chili Peppers. So like, this always has a soft spot in my mind. And then like going into the next song, I got into the next song in college and went back and was like, have you ever heard about John Frusciante? And he was like, yeah, it's that guy that I was showing you in high school, do you remember? And I was like, oh, no way. So yeah, I don't know, this song kind of has like a sentimental point because I got into it at two different points in my life.
So this was kind of your entry point, really.
Yeah, but not realizing it at the time, just like being like, this guy is cool, but not really connecting it to the Chili Peppers and not following up on it, and then got out of it. And then when I got into college, people were into John Frusciante, like a different group of friends were, and that got me right into him again. And I came home thinking I was going to be like, dude, you got to check this guy out. And he was like, no, I already told you about him. And I was like, oh.
You know, nice.
Yeah, one of those things. So the next one is called Omission. It's off his next album called Shadows Collide with People. He's had a couple albums in between at this point. He did a couple soundtracks for movies or like outtake albums and things. But this was his next album that he actually produced that was supposed to be just like, it's a full complete album.
Yeah.
He was so disappointed with the quality of the sound on To Record Only Water for 10 days that he was like, I'm gonna just do this full produced album next. And this is what he did during the time he was releasing By the Way with the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Okay. This right off the bat, it sounds much more commercial.
Oh,
and
for sure. It also has like a very big Beach Boys influence. You can hear all the harmonies and like the lush kind of textured sounds and things.
It almost sounds like an Oasis song or like Matchbox 20 or something.
I can hear that. This is him singing, and then the next voice, that kind of higher falsetto, is his name's Josh Klinghoffer. He's one of John Frusciante's best friends. He's from a different band. He's a huge John Frusciante idol that's like 10 years younger than him. And when John quit the Red Hot Chili Peppers, Josh took over as the guitar player.
Oh, interesting.
During their like kind of crappy period. their most recent kind of off period.
Oh, got it.
He wrote all the drums. He's a drum player. He wrote all the drums on this album, but he was so young and nervous that he didn't want to record them. So he taught Chad Smith, the drummer from the Chili Peppers, all his drum parts, and Chad's playing the drums on this.
On this album?
The whole album.
Cool.
Flea plays on a couple of songs, I think, and then Omar Rodriguez Lopez from the Mars Volta, who's another big friend of his, plays guitar on a bunch of stuff as well. He was actually, John Frusciante was the studio guitarist for the Mars Volta for their first two albums, too. And you can totally hear it on, like, anytime he gets to just do a solo of his own, it's all just, like, little John Frusciante-ism, kind of, like, fiddly bits and whatnot. But then, like, this is super dancey. He's a big dance fan. It has all these weird parts where it has this, like, epic guitar kind of acoustic stuff going on. And then this part's a little bit more on the punky side and dancier side.
Yeah.
And all of his harmonies kind of going on at the same time.
It's interesting. I feel like a lot of times when a guitar player from a famous band has side projects, especially when they're regarded as like being one of the greatest of all times, it tends to have more of that show-offy, like virtuoso quality.
Yes.
And that may be something that he does in other songs, but so far what you've been featuring isn't that at all.
No.
It's much more songcraft based.
Oh, right. Totally. He's way more of a songwriter than people give him credit for. I'm glad you kind of reminded me for that, because I wanted to bring it up. A lot of people, I come from a background of being super into like the Ramones, which he's a huge Johnny Ramone fan, but I was more kind of a punk person, and like as a younger person, when you're more jaded and angry at the world in your teens and 20s or whatever, you look, there's certain stereotypes that you look at and you're just like, I'm never gonna become that person. And one of them is the Joey Satriani fan.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the people who are just into guitar virtuosos, the Steve Vais, the Stevie Ray Vaughan people.
Sure.
Who maybe there's not actually a song there, or there's some kind of blues song that's kind of stereotypical and you're there just for the technical aspect.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I feel like people look at John Frusciante from the outside. Hold on, because this part's awesome. The big climax of the song. People look at John Frusciante from the outside and they think that he's going to be one of those people because he's the 18th
highest. That's 100% what I would have guessed.
Ranked guitar player in the world. And he does so much crazy guitar solos in the Chili Peppers and things like that. And he's not against it. I mean, like that whole part that he was just doing at that climax wasn't a solo, but it was basically like a Pete Townsend-y kind of just like flurry riffing kind of stuff.
Sure. And impressive. It's not like there's nothing. He's got like polish.
Oh,
and,
for sure.
And there's a virtuosity there, but it's not like you said, it's not what you're there
for. It's tempered.
Yeah.
So right after this was released. When was this one? Yeah, February 2004, which was probably his most prolific career point at that point. He had just finished up with By the Way, and was thinking about how he had 6 months to break from the Red Hot Chili Peppers and 70 songs worth of music to record that he wanted to do. And so he just, like, if you look it up on Wikipedia, all these different albums that we're going to talk about in the next kind of song or whatever, he recorded each of them over maybe a 6-day period and then released each of them over the course of maybe the next 6 months. And each of them is almost all of them are like fully realized albums that are entirely different from each other. There's a few with tracks where you're like, I wouldn't have put that track on there or whatever. But
sure.
Like when you're doing 6 albums in 6 months, it's crazy, you know? So like you're kind of have a couple bloated things on there. It's kind of like Sandinista from The Clash, where they were just like putting out album after album and
seeing what sticks.
Yeah, exactly. So like this is the same for him. This is called A Firm Kick. It's from October 2004. It's off of Inside of Emptiness. He says that he binge records, and this is one of those periods. This was probably, I think this was album 4 or 5 in a row. So the order is The Will to Death in June, which is just like a straight rock album. Then he did Automatic Writing, which was an improv-based band that he did with the bass player from Fugazi and then Josh Klinghoffer on drums, the guitarist that took over for him out in the Chili Peppers, which is these like 10 minute long improv songs. Then he did this thing called the DC EP, which is just a 4-song EP that he recorded with Ian McKay from Fugazi. Then he did this album, which is Inside of Emptiness, which is probably the heaviest album that he did. Then A Sphere in the Heart of Silence, which is his first techno record, which is kind of his only good electronic record. And then we'll get into that a little bit, because we'll get into it later. And then Curtains, which we'll feature and talk about more later, which is more acoustic.
Okay. So this one heavy musically.
Yes. Yeah. This one's almost all very fat, distorted kind of songs. This is probably one of the quieter parts of the song, but like it gets heavier as it goes on.
And it has that kind of grunge feel to it, mm-hmm. almost, where you could feel it picking up.
Highlighting his great vocal skills at this point. Like, his lessons really paid off, I feel like. He has a completely amazing range of going low, kind of staying regular. And then he does falsetto later, which is awesome. The harmonizing he's doing.
Yeah, it is night and day from that first song,
yes.
coming out of his rehab period.
More lyrics that are just kind of him coaching himself. A lot of the times it feels like he's having an argument with himself with his lyrics, or like kind of just talking through a problem that he's having. And a lot of it's like him dealing with his fame, or like trying to like tell himself more zen stuff. This guitar solo is crazy, just more texture than anything, but still really cool. This part's awesome.
Is Anthony Kiedis ever involved in any of his
no.
solo stuff? It's
absolutely
interesting
nothing.
That like everybody is involved except for him almost.
We'll talk about Anthony Kiedis when we get to the Chili Peppers song. Hold on one second. Love is going high. Song of Thunder, you may recognize. Love that line. Yeah, well, the one Chili Pepper song I feature at the end is off of By the Way, which is the album that he kind of wrote himself, like to the point where he wrote the bass lines, which is kind of crazy thinking about
yeah.
Flea and the band. But he did so with Anthony Kiedis, like almost exclusively, where they just sat together. So I think the Chili Pepper side of things is him and Anthony kind of working stuff out way more.
Interesting.
And I think that everybody else in the band that he works with outside of it is like, this is also their chance to like try something different.
I'm not just very surface level exposure mm-hmm. to Red Hot Chili Peppers, so do Flea and any of the other guys have their own solo stuff too?
Yeah, Chad has a band called like Chicken Foot or something stupid like
oh,
that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, I've heard of them. They're like a super group.
Yeah,
right?
It's like him and Sammy Hagar or something like that. Flea.
Air quotes around super.
Yeah, right. Flea did Atoms for Peace with Tom York from Radiohead.
Okay.
Which was awesome. But beyond that, I feel like a lot of the time he kind of gets his. He does a lot of featuring on other people's albums, but not necessarily like kind of being in a project with them or whatever.
Sure.
He's another person that played bass throughout all of the first Mars Volta album.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
If I can do one thing outside of getting people into John Frusciante off this album, is try to get people to listen to the first Mars Volta album, the Deloused in the Comatorium. That's basically members of At the Drive-In and all of the good people from Chili Peppers and a few other different bands kind of all putting their stuff together and just doing the craziest prog rock ever. But I don't know.
I've only heard a few Mars Volta songs, always enjoyed it, but mm-hmm. I liked At the Drive-In, so I feel
yeah.
like
it'd
be up my alley.
They got bloated as they went on, but that first album is just raw energy, amazing ideas all working together, really cool stuff.
All right, so our next one, Ascension.
Mm-hmm. This is off of Curtains. It's the last one he did from this run. They actually released it in February 2005. It's almost entirely acoustic, recorded in his living room. This one, the lyrics are more just like coaching Zen thoughts kind of things. We'll get to it when we get to the chorus, but it's a lot of just kind of good ideas to live by, I guess, or whatever. Just like a lot of times his lyrics are things that you just would be helpful to repeat to yourself as a mantra. Excuse me.
Which he probably needed a lot of that.
Oh, after. I agree. Yeah. Another one where the guys from Mars Volta helped out. At this point, he's kind of super open about the heroin point in his life, and kind of willing to talk about that because it was such an obvious and public thing that he gets asked about it almost every interview, that he kind of just puts a lot of it into his lyrics. He says that a lot of his lyrics were jokes, but then like 5 years later, he'd be like, no, that was about this, and you know.
Interesting.
You do fine on your own. I love this line. It's old man, you don't need anyone. Just hold on to the edge and don't be afraid to die or something like that. And then the next one is like, woman, you'll do fine on your own. Feel free to cry and you don't have to wipe your eyes. It's just a lot of these kind of just like you type of people in this bad situation. Don't feel bad that you're in this situation, and you in this terrible situation, don't feel bad. Kind of stuff, just pointing to all these different horrible situations and kind of coaching people through it.
Yeah. I can't even imagine that kind of life where like you just got on a roller coaster at age 18.
Yep.
And then you are a superstar in within 2 years, and that kind of cliche thing where you feel invincible and then just get sucked into
probably, yeah. And also, like, going into a door that you feel is very clearly labeled one thing, and when you go through it, it's not that at all. Like, it becomes this larger-than-life thing that you can't escape. That kind of, it's just, you know, I don't know, just very much like it is a roller coaster, but you thought you were getting on the Lazy River inner tube thing, kind of, when you started. Don't even have. Kind of a silly ending. He does this kind of, like, little dramatic, but awesome. I mean, there's a lot of there's points where he's so purely positive and introspective and like needed, kind of like when I was going through like my mid-20s or whatever, like trying to figure out my own life, that I loved the really high points, that like the negative, weird, goofy stuff that he does. I'm kind of just like, I laugh at it, you know, or kind of like, it's kind of having a friend who has a lot of weird, goofy personality quirks, but has always been there for you and has the heart-to-heart conversations with you. So you're willing to put up with their like goofy puns or like kind of like sillier points or whatever.
Sure.
You know. All right, I need to grab another piece of paper.
Page 2 of the notes.
Yes, sorry.
It's
came
great.
With a lot of research.
I love it. Very well researched.
All right. So this next one's called Central. It's a huge jump forward at this point. This is from January 2009. It's post the Red Hot Chili Peppers' indefinite hiatus that they went on after their last album. Going off of Curtains, he was saying that he thought he would kind of get more, like, this sounds vain, but he said that he thought he was going to get more attention for putting out 6 albums in a year, and no one cared, which was crazy. But so he was like, I'm going to go into my next album and produce the hell out of it. He spent over $100,000 of his own money putting out this album and doing all the production himself. And at this point, Chili Peppers are kind of over. They put out a huge bloated record. I remember watching like a behind the scenes of different songs that they put out on that album where Anthony was like, yeah, I'd notice John singing a melody, and I'd be like, what melody is that? And he'd be like, I don't want to tell you. And he'd be kind of working on his own stuff at that point. This album is his definite, you can hear the production on it, but it's also kind of less lush than Shadows Collide with People from a couple songs ago. It's more pinpointy. Each song has like a definitive sound that it's kind of going for. Like the first song sounds like a Parliament Funkadelic song. This one kind of has more of like a kind of Fugazi kind of weird distortion effect going out through the whole thing. But then there's like a banjo at like the solo point midway through the song, and there's tons of piano. There's tons of stuff going on this record.
Not to mention the fact that it's a 7-minute song.
Yes.
It's going to allow you to do a lot of different stuff.
Mm-hmm. It kind of feels bloated at 7 minutes, but it's definitely the longest song with lyrics on the album, but it kind of blows through. Like, we'll kind of, it'll be 7 minutes will go by in like no time, honestly. Yeah. It's his last rock album. It's kind of worth talking about at this point. After this, he started only doing electronic records, and they're almost as bad as his heroin period albums, where they're unlistenable. It's just kind of, some stuff sounds really good, where there's the 45 seconds of really cool riffing in the middle, and then the rest of it's just bleeps and bloops and distortions kind of stuff, where he's kind of doing like trap music, but it took him a while to get good at trap music. So the first 3 or 4 albums are pretty terrible.
Really?
Yeah. And at this point, like, this was 2009, and he didn't announce that he was joining up with the band again until 2019. It just felt like 10 years of, we're never going to get another guitar record from John Frusciante. And after, like, having that many albums, it was kind of, you know, just a famine or whatever.
Yeah.
A big drought. It honestly kind of felt like, it's weird getting another John Frusciante rock album, if we get it, before we get another Game of Thrones album, book or whatever, you know? It's a similar kind
of... It's like that just, hopeless.
Yeah, exactly. But everyone keeps pointing out that his best rock albums were when he was with the Chili Peppers. He had so many ideas that he couldn't put on their albums that he just took them to his own stuff. So yeah. I'm kind of positive that he's going to put out some solo stuff soon that maybe has electronic-y tinge to it, but hopefully gets back into the guitar stuff.
Are the Chili Peppers working on a new album, or is it like a tour? Like,
no, they said they're getting back in the studio. I don't think he would join up again if it was just to do a tour or whatever. I feel like, because they got inducted into the Hall of Fame and he didn't go, even though he was on the lineup at that point.
Wow.
He just didn't care. And like Josh went, the guy who took over for him. And it's kind of sad that Josh is so good. I'm first name basis, I guess.
Yeah.
Josh Klinghoffer is so good on all the John Frusciante albums that, like, the one album he did with the Peppers kind of is a wet fart. It just has...
Which album is that?
I don't even know what it's called. It's their most recent one. It's got a bunch of animals
okay.
And a girl on the cover.
I don't think I would even know it.
Yeah. It had a single or two, but I don't even... I, like, actively do not enjoy the Red Hot Chili Peppers. I listened to too much Chili Peppers trying to hear the John Frusciante in them. And trying to get into them because I liked John Frusciante.
Yeah.
I maybe like 5 actual Red Hot Chili Peppers songs out of their entire collection. And probably listened to them way more than I should have. To the point where when he joined up again, I was like, no, I don't want to have to listen to more Chili Peppers. I just don't like Anthony Kiedis. Sorry.
No, I could see that. His voice is kind of... I don't know. There's nothing special about it. It's kind of goofy at times.
Yeah, and his lyrics are just kind of jokes at all. Even when, like, this next one that we're doing is from By the Way, and that's probably his most deep and kind of introspective emotional lyrics. And even then, it's still goofy, silly rhyme stuff where he just can't not mention California a couple times and name drop locations he's on tour.
Yeah.
Not a big fan, but...
It almost has some of the worst lyrical tendencies of, like, rap rock.
Yes. Agreed. This guitar solo is amazing. And also, weirdly, this album is his only concept album, which is weird that, like, he got to a point where he, like, it's actually good for him that he got to the point where he didn't feel like he had to coach himself through his lyrics anymore, and he could just start singing about and writing about other stuff.
Even when he is doing like guitar solos and that mm-hmm. kind of a thing, it's very tasteful and melodic versus like trying to melt your face off or whatever.
Right. I mean, this is shredding, but at the same time, it's all about the wall of sound textures from that background keyboard or whatever's going on. And then he can just, like, wail vocally at this point, too, which is great to hear. Like, one of the things that is almost kind of like a cliche for John Frusciante fans is his ability just to go, yeah, of his own kind of like Anthony Kiedis does, but, like, in this yeah. way that isn't just like, yeah, oh, yeah. It's more kind of like, I don't know, there's more passion behind it, it feels like.
Yeah, it's less, maybe less of a gimmick.
Yeah, for sure. Great strings, too.
And does that bring us to the one Chili Peppers yes. song on the list?
So this next one is called Dosed. It's off of By the Way, which was from 2002. He was doing this around the same time that he was doing Shadows Collide. It's produced by Rick Rubin. Flea almost quit the band at this point because John felt like they had explored every aspect of funk and they would never need to do another funk song. So he was trying to push them into more... The two ideas he had had for this album were Beatles-y Beach Boys and then kind of Bad Brains punk rock. And he never got to do the punk side of things, and they just focused on the melodic stuff. He wrote all the bass lines for this. He wrote most of the guitar. He wrote a lot of the vocal melodies with Anthony Kiedis. And you'll hear it as the song goes on. John can't help himself but start singing the song himself. And he sings the rest of the song with Anthony at this point.
Is that him on the harmony?
Yes. For the rest of... And, like, I love this album because of how much John puts into it. A lot of people think Can't Stop, the song that was a single off this album, the Can't Stop, Addicted to the Shindig,
yeah.
is such a cheesy song. But, like, if you take out Anthony Kiedis, it just becomes this amazing John solo song, kind of whatever. It's, you almost have to look past Anthony Kiedis to hear, like, John Frusciante solo stuff. But yeah, so hold on. I love this kind of background. It's not even a background. He's kind of singing the main vocals for this. He had no idea that Flea was so upset about it, not being doing any more funk stuff, that like when Flea told him that he was going to quit the band, he was like, no, we can go back to doing funk. We can totally do some more funk stuff. I'm so sorry.
Well, I mean, I guess it makes sense. Like, that's, like, where Flea shines.
Yes, that's what he likes doing. There's a few songs on here. Flea is just as good a trumpet player, supposedly, as he is a bass player. So, like, at points where he wasn't able to, like, show off his bass skill on this record, he, like, made sure to put a lot of trumpet into the stuff, which is super weird, but, like, a welcome addition. It's kind of like how David Bowie's good at sax and like throws a ton of sax into his songs that you're just not expecting.
I was not aware of that.
Oh yeah, anytime you'll notice that there's like a disproportionate amount of like saxophone solos on David Bowie tracks just because he's so good at sax that he just keeps tossing it in there. I actually did not like this song when this was a single too, when this album was out. At this point I was more into the funkier stuff that the Peppers were doing, trying to... Because this is before I really knew who John Frusciante was. I was more into the Pepper side of the stuff at the time, right after Californication.
Sure.
But then coming back to this, I was looking for a song that the Chili Peppers did that would personify all the different aspects of John Frusciante, and of course it's off the album that he basically took over for. But this one just has his amazing intricate guitar stuff, his amazing melodies, his raw emotional kind of feeling, a lot of lush sounds. It's worth kind of, if you like John Frusciante, if you end up enjoying his solo stuff, you'll go back and painfully listen to a lot of Chili Peppers you didn't think you were gonna like, just to hear his cool guitar solo,
his layering
stuff. Yeah, exactly. I'm like a Chili Peppers apologist almost, like, in spite of the Peppers kind of fan yeah. or whatever. Like, I saw them specifically so I could say that I saw John Frusciante live. And, like, they give him, like, 5 minutes where he gets to do one song by himself, and he always does, like, a...
Really?
Yeah, like...
Will he do, like, one of his solo?
No, he always chooses, like, a different, like, cover, or, like, he'll pick a Supreme song or something like that and, like, try to do that. His covers are awesome. He takes a lot of songs... Like, he does Modern Love by David Bowie, or he'll do a couple Ramones songs, and he'll completely transform the orchestration on it or whatever and slow it down or speed it up and make it all sound different. So it's cool to hear him, like, take something and reinterpret it.
I do love that love for John Frusciante seems to be like a big part of the fan base.
Mm. Oh yeah, when he came back, it was just like so many people were just talking about it purely because it kind of revitalized the Chili Peppers fan base just to have him back in the band. Because whenever he's in the band, they're at their most prolific, they're at their most successful and most creative. And for actual fans of John Frusciante who only get to listen to him through so much of his Chili Pepper stuff, it's a chance for him to kind of get back into the studio and do other stuff too.
Is that the last one on the list?
That's the last one. I feel like I could do a set, like going through it, my original playlist was like three times the size, and I feel like I could come on just to talk about awesome John Frusciante songs, but I tried to like focus on telling the story of his career up to a certain point. This is basically up to 2009. I skipped his electronic-y stuff. You could probably wait another 10 years and see what happens and kind of get like a repeat of his career of just like the dark period where his fans weren't able to listen to anything good. And then he comes back to the Chili Peppers, we're hoping, and puts out another cool discography of solo stuff. Fingers crossed.
Well, anything else you want to add on this before we switch to our drinking game?
No, just check out the six albums starting with, or six or seven albums he put out in 2004 and put on that first Mars Volta record, Deluxe and the Comatorium. Those are the two big ones.
All right. Well, in honor of John Frusciante, our drinking game today is called Fresh Auntie, a trivia game dedicated to Aunt Vivian from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Oh, great. I've never seen that show.
Never once?
Never.
Oh, this should be pretty...
This is going to be interesting.
Interesting, mm-hmm. Yeah. So the rules are, if you get it wrong, you take a drink. If you get it right, I'll take a drink.
Sure.
Are you ready for your first question?
Yep.
Aunt Vivian was famously recast on the show. Were you aware of that?
Yes.
Due to tensions with which of her co-stars?
Ooh... I want to.
You could give me character
Uncle
names
Phil.
Too. It actually was Will Smith.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. He's all so right. Likable, though.
I know. Well, I want to talk about this.
Okay.
Because, but we'll do it at the end because there are more like show tension questions. In
sure,
here,
bring so. It on.
The two actresses who played Aunt Viv were Daphne Maxwell Reed mm-hmm. and Janet Hubert Witten. Which actress came first?
The first one, the one you listed first.
The second one I listed. Janet Hubert Witten was the first Aunt Vivian. Hubert Witten posted a rant on Facebook after which former cast member posted a reunion photo excluding her on Instagram?
Carlton.
Correct.
Yes!
Yeah. Did you know that or were you
no.
guessing?
No, I was just hoping to guess right.
Got two questions left. Which Great. Of the following is not a job the character Aunt Vivian has held? A, doctor, B, teacher, or C, lawyer?
She was not a doctor.
That is incorrect. She was never a lawyer.
Okay.
And then final question. In a later interview, costume designer Carlo Tang commented that Will Smith and other cast members would jokingly refer to Hubert's Vivian as Marcus, a fictional what? A, bodybuilder, B, lifeguard, or C, prince?
Hmm. I'm going to go with prince?
It's bodybuilder. So I think you got like one of those mm-hmm, right, which mm-hmm. is pretty good for never having seen
guessing.
The show. What I wanted to say about Carlton is that the main tension on the show was between Will Smith and the Aunt Vivian actress, mm-hmm. but she also reportedly hates the actor that played Carlton
really?
Because he's like a huge Will Smith defender in that feud. And she just thinks he's like,
kind of a
kiss
suck
ass
no.
sycophant Will Smith defender.
I can see both sides of this argument.
Yeah, I can too. It's mm-hmm. it's tricky because I guess in an interview Will Smith said that one of the reasons they had tension was that this actress had been in the industry for a long time mm. and she really resented the fact that Will Smith just like came in
happened.
And had a show and so there was like a lot of that and he was like she basically wanted it to be the Aunt Vivian show. And
makes no sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And then she basically called him like a snot-nosed punk who like came in and just took the show. But that again is like his side of it.
Sure.
I think her side of it is also that he didn't treat her with respect,
sure,
or, you know, whatever. But Carlton supposedly does stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
And I did not know that, but he in his set was basically saying like the entire cast is on Will Smith's side except for her.
Right. She's like alienated everyone.
Yeah. And it's like, if everyone's against you, it's weird. It would be weird if you were in the right.
It's that whole, like, if you think everyone's an asshole kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, that is our drinking game. Any final thoughts? Did you like the beer?
No, this is great. Very kind of rich and kind of heavy. It has like the molassesy flavor, which I really like when I drink beer.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
I liked the sherbet, the rainbow sherbet. I didn't get. We still have two left over.
Was it sour?
So it was a sour, but it wasn't too sour. It was very sweet. It was basically exactly what you would think of when you think of like sherbet. It was like very fruity but tangy, kind of a sour experience.
The label looks like the Yellow Submarine movie.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, any final thoughts on John Frusciante before we wrap? Anything you want to plug for yourself?
Not really. Just go back and listen to the other ones where I talk about other music and stuff. That's it. I draw on Instagram, I guess. I do some cartooning on Instagram under Landry Sesame, LandrySesame. That's about it.
And you make jokes on Twitter sometimes that make me laugh?
That's debatable. But sure. Yeah. That's also Landry Sesame. Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess we'll wrap for now. Thanks for listening. Here's to you.
Thanks for having me on.